story put together by people who want to legislate their actions or our actions. So tonight, we're going to start with that thought in mind. We're going to look at the historicity of the man Jesus. Then we'll look at his claim of divinity. And in that claim of divinity, we'll be looking at John chapter 17. We'll be looking at Matthew chapter 16, verse 16, where, "And who do you say that I am?" What was Peter's answer? Son of God. We're going to be looking at some of the I am statements. We want to see what was it that Jesus was telling the people, telling the Jews, by uttering, "I am the bread of life." What was that message that goes beneath the surface? We're going to look at the nature of God. Because some people have a very skewed concept of who God is. And then we're going to look at the testimony of others for the divinity of Jesus. When it's all said and done, we hope to accomplish being able to see Jesus as man and as God. Well, why is this study so important? I think Michael Green kind of summed it up in his words. He wrote for InterVarsity Press in a book called Runaway World. And he said, it is is all about Jesus of history. That's what it's all about. You remove Jesus from Christianity and nothing distinctive is left. I don't know that I necessarily always agree with everything he says, but I think he has an important thought here. Once you disprove the historicity, see, somebody else uses that word, of Jesus Christ, and Christianity will collapse like a pack of cards. For it all depends on this fundamental conviction that God was made manifest in human flesh. And this is a matter not of theology or mythology, but of history. So that is the reason we're going to take a few moments and look at the historicity of Jesus. One of the writers from the time, a Roman historian, a Samaritan, by the way, who wrote in AD 52, was named Thallus. And he was writing concerning the darkness that fell upon the earth. He was actually writing in Rome. And in his third book of histories, he's trying to explain away the eclipse of the sun. What are we talking about? We're talking about, as Jesus hung on the cross, what happened? Darkness came upon the face of the earth from the third hour to the ninth hour. Is that correct? For 6 hours? I have to look at the verse again. But the darkness came. What is significant in his statement is not that he's arguing whether an eclipse happened or not, which they tell me is impossible to happen during a full moon. But be that as it may, what is important is that it accepted the reality of Jesus in order to make his argument. He had to have known about Jesus in order to make his argument. What are you even talking about an eclipse or about darkness unless you know something about the man, Jesus? Second thing that's a little bit of an observation from his statement is that it was accepted general knowledge to the people of Rome that this happened in Palestine. Do you see the impact of that statement? That they knew about Jesus and it was common knowledge. Those are two very key thoughts. There was a gentleman by the name of Mara Bar Serapon. And if you can't read this, I apologize. This is what I was saying, that I wanted to keep the text so that you could see it in its entirety. He is writing to his son in prison. His son was in prison somewhere around AD 73, and he's making an argument. This actual manuscript is found among the British Museum Sciatic manuscripts in England. He's writing to his son, and he says, "What advantage did the Athenians gain over putting Socrates to death? Famine and plague came upon them as judgment for their crime. What advantage did Samos gain from burning Pythagoras?" In a moment, their land was covered with sand. "What advantage did the Jews gain from executing their wise king? It was just after that that their kingdom was abolished. God justly avenged these three men. The Athenians died of hunger. The Samaritans were overwhelmed by the sea. And the Jews, complete dispersion. But Socrates did not die for good. He lived on in the teaching of Plato. Pythagoras did not die for good. He lived on in the statute of Hera. Nor did the wise king die for good. He lived on in the teaching in which he had given." Well, obviously there's some fallacies here. He didn't know the full picture or the full concept of Jesus or that he was resurrected. But the fact that he knew that there was a man, what did he call him? The king of the Jews, shows that Jesus existed. Like that testimony? This is not Mark. This is not Matthew. This is not Paul who wandered around. These are people of the time, of the days, of the age, who are writing about this man Jesus. Cornelius Tacitus, I can't even say his name. Tacitus was a Roman historian. He was born around 54 A.D. And he wrote, somewhere when he was around 60 years of age, he wrote concerning the reign of Nero. Nero reigned from 54 to 68 A.D. And he wrote about a rumor that that Nero had started the fires of Rome. Consequently, to get rid of the report, quote unquote, Nero fastened the guilt and inflicted the most exquisite tortures on a class hated by the populace, Christus, from whom the name had its origin, suffered the extreme penalty during the reign of Tiberius at the hands of one of the procurators, Pontius Pilatus. Actual historical document written in his Annals and History, chapter 15, 44. Does that sound like what John wrote? The man existed. Plinius Secundus, or also called Pliny the Younger, was the governor of Bithynia. He wrote to the Emperor Trajan concerning the problem of Christians around AD 112. He was curious as to what to do with these people called Christians. He tortured young girls, Christian girls, in order to ascertain what they did. And this is what he wrote to the Emperor Trajan in his epistles, listed here in chapter 10, 96. "They were in the habit of meeting on a certain day before it was light, when they sang an anthem to Christ as God and bound themselves by a solemn oath not to commit any wicked deed, after which it was their custom to separate and then to meet again to partake of food, but food of an ordinary kind." Now, I added this history in here because why? What were they doing? They were coming together, they were singing and worshiping about Christ, and what was this here? The Lord's Supper. He didn't understand all that he got from torturing the Christians, but he understood that somebody, this person, who they call Christ, was being praised, and they ate ordinary food, and he didn't understand the consequences of it. Suetonius wrote in the life of Claudius, chapter 25, 4, he was a recorder of the imperial house during the reign of Hadrian. He wrote in 120 AD concerning the life of Claudius. He wrote, as the Jews were making constant disturbances at the instigation of Christus, he, referring to Claudius, expelled them from Rome. Well, what are you talking about? What did you include that? Paul just shared with us the book of Acts. In Acts chapter 18, verses 1 and 2, what is recorded there? Aquila and Priscilla escaped Rome because why? Because of the persecution, right? They were expelled from Rome during the reign of life of Claudius. What am I trying to do? I'm painting you a picture that Christ lived in a time and a place that is cement. Well, let's go beyond the historical note and let's look at some of the other sources that might reference Jesus. The Talmud. We read tonight Exodus chapter, I read it, Bill, and I can't even tell you what it was. Was it 24? 23. Exodus chapter 23. In the Pentateuch, there are 613 rules or laws. 613 of them. The Mishnah, which was written between AD 70 to 200 AD, is a enlargement or a Jewish code of religious, I can't even say the word. Say it. Jurisprudence. The Mishnah tries to give understanding as to the law. In other words, what we read today in Exodus chapter 23 was man shall not work on the seventh day. What is work? It was codified. And that's what the Mishnah tried to do, was codify the law that God had given, all 613 of them. Now, the Gemaris, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, is the second part of Talmud sources. They are commentaries that were written throughout the ages. Now, what is so important about that? Well, they established the reality of the existence of Jesus, and two, they claimed that he is a failed Messiah because he did not shepherd in the redemption of the world that Judaism expected. I just want to kind of underscore what I just said there by a little web research. The website was myjewishlearning.com. The question was, I know this may sound silly to you, but I'm asking this in all seriousness. In the Jewish faith, who do they say that Jesus was? Was he an ordinary man, a prophet, or a rebel who was causing trouble? Signed, Trish, here in the United States. Here's the answer that the Jewish people gave this young lady. Trish, your question doesn't sound silly at all. About a third of the questions that are submitted to the expert, this is the service on the website, is the expert service, are from Christians wanting to better understand the Jewish take on a given subject. And many of those are about Jesus in particular. I can understand why someone who has made Jesus a big part of her life would want to know how Jesus is understood by other religions. Here's the short answer. Judaism does not consider Jesus to be a prophet, does not consider him to be the Messiah, nor the Son of God. That's the Jewish answer. But the exact way Jews have spoken about Jesus has throughout history had a lot to do with the social and political context in which they were living. Jews have often been subjected to Christian monarchs and governments. And the tenor of that experience has often colored the way particular communities responded to the church as a whole and Jesus in particular. What are they saying? They're saying during the Middle Ages or during the Inquisition, when the Jews were being punished, how did they feel about Jesus? Pretty sour. He goes on. In the Middle Ages, when many Jews in Europe were experiencing rampant persecution, a series of derogatory and inflammatory legends about Jesus' life became popular within some of the Jewish communities. Today, as Jews and Christians live in relative harmony, the attitude among most Jews toward Jesus is one of respect, but not religious reverence. This attitude is reflected by Rabbi Irving Greenberg in his book, For the Sake of Heaven and Earth, The New Encounter Between Judaism and Christianity, where he refers to Jesus as a failed Messiah rather than a false Messiah. Okay? Observation from what the statements make. Number one, what are they talking about? They're talking about the man Jesus. Did they question his existence? No. That was taken as a fact. The Jews understand that Jesus lived. Okay, going on. I lost my place. I shouldn't have stopped. He explains, a failed Messiah is one who has the right values and upholds the covenant, but does not attain the final goal. According to Rabbi Greenberg, the message Jesus brought was a good one, but he could not be the Jewish Messiah because he did not shepherd in the redemption of the world that Judaism expects to occur in the Messianic era. Okay? This more respectful tone is common among Jewish leaders today. When I asked Emily Soloff, the Midwest director from American Jewish Community, for her thoughts about Jesus, she responded, Jesus was definitely a historical figure, a charismatic community leader who was deeply troubled by what he saw as the failures of a society and spoke eloquently about those failures in the hope of change. What are the Jews saying about Jesus? He existed. And he did not shirk from pointing out the fallacies of his day. The professor of the New Testament Studies at Vanderbilt University Divinity School, Dr. Amy Jill Levine, reminded me that as in any subject, there is a diverse Jewish response. In an email to me, she wrote, just as there is no single Jewish view on most matters, there is no single Jewish view about Jesus of Nazareth. Some Jews regard him as a wise rabbi, others view him as a heretic. Some find inspiration in his teachings, others take offense at his claims. Dr. Levine also brought up two significant points. A lot of Jews don't know very much about Jesus or New Testament scholarship. Of course, there are some diverse views of Jesus within Christianity too. A lot of interfaith work likes to emphasize what we have in common, and certainly there are many things that the world's major faiths do share. But where the Jews draw the line is at calling Jesus a prophet or the Messiah. That's the point of departure. Beyond that, you're likely to get many different understandings of Jesus' life and the work within the Jewish community. Ugh. Got me out of breath. But the important thing is the Jews themselves testify that Jesus existed as man. He was a historical person. He lived in a time and a place, and that was what is important. So we turn to Josephus. Josephus, who lived 37 A.D. to 100 A.D., he was born as Joseph ben Matthias, a Pharisee and a priest, and a general of the Jewish rebellious army. When he was captured by Vespasian, he at one point told Vespasian, "You're going to be the emperor." That occurred within 3 years. How he knew that? Don't know. Vespasian was not in line in the lineage to be emperor. In fact, Rome had 3 emperors during that time frame. No one could have really seen that coming. How did he know? Don't know. But I thought that that was interesting, because then after Vespasian was made emperor, he brought Josephus back out of prison. Josephus changed his name to Flavius Josephus and then began to write histories. Now, he wrote a number of books. Some of them are self-serving. Some of them are very slanted. But it's interesting, I think, to see what he says. This is what he has to say on page in the The Antiquities of the Jews, book 18, chapter 3. He writes, "Now there was about this time Jesus a wise man, if it be lawful to call him a man, for he is a doer of wonderful works, a teacher of such men as receive the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him both many of the Jews and many of the Gentiles. He was the Christ. And when Pilate, at the suggestion of the principal men amongst us, had condemned him to the cross, those that loved him at the first did not forsake him. For he appeared to them alive again the third day, as the divine prophets had foretold, and 10,000 other wonderful things concerning him. And the tribe of Christians so named from him are not extinct." Extinct at this day. This is from a non-believer. This is a Jewish turncoat. And what does he say? That not only Jesus lived, he called him the Christ. And he also talked about what? The resurrection. Now, in the footnote, in my copy of Josephus, and maybe in yours as well, I found it interesting that the date that was given, the date that he was crucified, was April 3rd of the year 33. Who put the footnote there? I don't know. I couldn't find any source to govern that for me. But I thought that that was interesting. Okay. Let's go quickly here. The historical reality of Jesus. There's an acid test. An acid test is that when something is written about someone, we need to understand that it's in a time-space setting. Okay? What does that mean? If I told you Jackie Dyer is 6'4", blonde, and blue-eyed, you would tell me, "Jack, you're not talking about me," is correct. Just happens to be a Jack Dyer that I knew back in Lubbock, Texas, who was 6'4", blonde-haired as could be, and a member of the church. Just happened to go to the Broadway Congregation Church of Christ. But what I'm saying here is, you know me. You're sitting in front of me. Many have had their plate stolen by me. You know who I am. And if someone were to say something about Jack, you'd be able to either correct me or correct the statement, or whatever the case may be. Well, a couple quick things to point out. The Dead Sea Scrolls that were found contain 19 papyri fragments identified as the Gospel of Mark. Now, that's a significant thought here. Why is that significant? Because that those fragments have been verified by scientific dating, whatever good that is, to have been in the Palestinian library in A.D. 50. Now, you catch that time frame we're talking about here? We're talking about something that was written and in existence in the library just, 17 years after the event happened. I've been with this congregation for 17 years, for over 17 years. You can correct me. And do correct me sometimes when I need it. Here is something that has happened that history of Mark, or the Gospel of Mark, was in existence and distributed by A.D. 50. I think that's significant. Well, let's look at the acid test. According to Lewis Castles, who is an UPI writer and wrote for the Nashville Banner, this is what he had to say. Mark's record had to survive the acid test of any journalistic or historical writing. I keep talking about this acid test. Well, what is it? That the item is published at a time when it can be read and criticized, and if inauthentic, denounced by the thousands of Jews, Christians, Romans, and Greeks who lived in Palestine at the time of Jesus' ministry. There's the acid test. If Jesus did not calm the sea, how many people were in the boat? The apostles? You think 12 people could have, one of the 12 could raise their hand and said, no, that never happened. If Jesus did not raise from the dead, how many people could testify that that's not a true statement? We know that he showed himself to the apostles, to Mary, and to 500 at one time. So there were plenty of people that could disprove the claim. The early church chose Mark to be one of the only four Gospels to be preserved for posterity in the New Testament. This also indicates that the people closest to the events found Mark's report accurate and trustworthy. Pardon me. Not a myth, but true history. Well, let's compare it real quick. I know my time's almost up for tonight. Let's compare history. We've talked about some of the historical people that have written histories throughout the time. We talked about a few of them here. We'll look at them in just a second. But what was written on concerning Caesar's Gallic Wars was written somewhere between 58 and 50 B.C. The oldest manuscript that we have in existence today was found in the 9th century A.D. That is a gap of 800 years. Why do I mention this? Because there are no original copies of what Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Paul, or Peter wrote. There are no original copies. So it's important that we look to see what is the oldest manuscript, to see what's out there, to see what is available. The Roman History of Livy was written between B.C. 59 to 17. The oldest manuscript we have in existence was found in the 4th century A.D. Funny thing about it, of 47 books he wrote, only 35 were ever found. Again, a gap of 300 years. Comparison with histories. The histories and annals of Tacitus was written around A.D. 100. The oldest manuscript that we've found, it was between the 9th and the 10th centuries. Of the histories, he wrote 14 books. We found 4.5 of them. Of the annals, he wrote 16. Only 10 have been found. This is a gap between 800 to 1,000 years. The history of Thucydides was written 460 B.C. to 400. The oldest manuscript, again, was around 900 A.D., a gap of 1,300 years. The History of Herodias, written between B.C. 480, 425, the oldest manuscript, is found in A.D. 900, a gap of 1,300 years. Well, this slide here, I know my time is up. What I'm trying to illustrate with this slide is just a comparison of what we have. The histories, all the ones that we have just discussed, what I've just mentioned here, the history of Theodos, look at the solid black line. That is the gap between when it was written and the earliest manuscript available. See that solid black line? That's almost 1,300 years, isn't it? The history of Herodias, again, almost 1,300 years. The Gaelic War, 800 years. But of the copies of the Bible that we have, the Codex Sinaiticus, the gap is 2.5 centuries. Being noticed we have. Not including what we found among the papyrus, there given, which was found in dated 50 A.D. Well, what I'm trying to say in conclusion is the man Jesus actually lived. The man Jesus did some wonderful things. The Gospels meet the acid test as to be used to determine the teaching and the actions of Jesus. They're the only thing that tells us the nature of Jesus. The Gospels contain the only record, plus the statements from Paul gives us, of what Jesus said and did. The Gospels are the most timely records from this time frame. Well, I thank you. That was a lot to cover in one night. Next week we'll open our Bibles and we'll look at the claim of Jesus' divinity, and we'll be spending some time with that. Are there any comments, questions, or thoughts? I'll end directly on 8 tomorrow, next time, hopefully.
I watched you on the eclipse. How did that turn out?
Well, he made the claim that the darkness was because of an eclipse. Now, what the astronomers have written is that you cannot have an eclipse during a period of full moon. The Passover was held when? At the period of the full moon. So the astronomers say that that is not the answer. Okay, good question.
The eclipse I ever heard of lasted from dim to 3.
That would have been a long eclipse. I think it's astounding. But see, you have at your disposal knowledge that they didn't have at that time. And if it's not of God, who caused the sun? What caused the sun to be darkened? Oh. UFO. Well, I thank you for the question and for the thoughts. And next week we will get into looking at Jesus' claim for divinity. Let us close with a word of prayer.